My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Man has been on this earth millions of years, exploring the planet, building civilizations, killing, and creating an endless cycle. Man first went into space starting almost 80 years ago. Think about it. We spent all this time getting around our own planet, arguing over the smallest bits of land. But when we finally set our mind to space travel, it only took us a few decades to get where we wanted to go. I'm proud to say, my grandmother was one of those that helped us to get there. She started out back in 1959, fresh out of college, as an intern for NASA. The space race was really going strong, the US versus the Soviets, and she managed to get in right in the middle. Gram stayed there for 40 more years, only retiring before Y2K. She's up there in years now. And I wanted to try to do something to preserve the memories she had of that time. So, I began to collect her stories. We started out with the basics, talking about how she joined, what she did, the history surrounding everything when she was there, all the things you learn in high school history class. When we started discussing the missions she worked on, though, that's when I realized that there was a lot of history missing. Locked up, never to be heard or read by anyone. Nor should it. There's a reason space exploration has slowed down. There were missions made off the books and off record, launched from secret black sites around the world. Gram both saw and heard terrors beyond our comprehension from the dark void of space. She shared these stories with me. These secrets kept from us by those in power. The human price of our curiosity is much higher than we're led to believe. And these people deserve to have their stories known. I'm enclosing one of her stories here. She can get a bit long-winded, as some do in their old age, so I've tried to edit down anything that isn't relevant. I'm still going through everything with her as well. With her age, she can't stay focused for very long, so we're doing these little interviews in hour sessions every day. I'll transcribe and upload what I can when I can. What follows is the transcript of what Gram told me on April 4th, 2020. Any interjections of my own will be formatted with brackets around them. My name is Evelyn Lara Smart. I was a mission control contact with NASA from 1959 to 1999. I was the one that any astronaut or crew would speak to, the voice on the ground. I relay this information back to whoever needed it in flight control. Navigation, engineering and such. I didn't set out to work there. It just sort of fell into my lap. I had worked as a switchboard operator, mostly taking emergency calls for the local departments. NASA was doing some recruiting, and one of my supervisors recommended me. Then, before I knew it, there I was, sitting in the big mission control room, watching the big screen with the video feed, and talking to our very own spacemen. Here, she goes into a tangent about how lovely Armstrong and Aldrin are, with many mentions about Christmas cards from the latter. So, one of the first missions I was there for was the first picture of Earth from orbit. Obviously, being in communication, I wasn't really necessary, but we were all crowded into the control room to see the picture as soon as it was transmitted. Granted, it was the late 50s, so we were waiting for quite a while. We expected cheers when it came through finally. It started that way, at least. Then, everything quickly died down. there was the Earth. The huge curve with a beautiful crown of light from the sun shining around it. We captured something else too, though. Something that I fear I'll see again one day. Behind the Earth, off in the distance, was something giant. It wasn't completely clear, but what you could make out was a clearly defined torso, arms outstretched with wicked spines jutting from the outside. Large red eyes blazed against the dark void behind the figure, with a gaping maw underneath opened in a terrifying roar. The scale of this thing was huge. No way it could be seen from a normal telescope here on Earth. We aimed our most powerful telescope at the coordinates we estimated it to be at and swept the sky, but couldn't see it anywhere. Took another picture from the satellite and it was gone, as if it had never been there. To this day, we don't know what the hell it was. We check for it in every photo we take, every sweep of the sky, and it's only shown up two more times since then. Once in 1979, and once in 1999. I don't know how many people in the agency know, so God knows if it's been there again. Every time it showed up, though, it appeared larger. Here, she goes on about a few notable advances in tech, most irrelevant to what we're discussing now. What a lot of people don't realize is that there were manned spaceflights before the ones on the history books. Sure, there's always been the theories about lost cosmonauts and such from the Soviets, and there are definitely true cases of that. But we had our share as well. There was the initial manned spaceflight in 1960, the Daedalus. She noticed the look of shock on my face, apparently, and laughed. Never heard about that one, eh? It was kept tightly under wraps. We didn't want anyone to know about it until we had them back on the ground successfully. Otherwise, it may kill morale around the office. No, we kept a small crew, launched the rocket off from an isolated area of Alaska. We did a lot of launches from there. Kept the Reds on their toes back in the day. Anyway, there was a three-man crew. There was Bill Zask, James Hanlon, and Terry Duncan. Those three were a tight crew. They were supposed to go up, orbit for 12 hours, then come back down. We would pass it off as a comet if anyone saw. But never got that chance. Things went south fast. They took off. All was fine until they hit the upper atmosphere. They tried to ease back on the jets, make sure they made it into orbit and didn't overshoot. Everything went to hell. Jets wouldn't cut off. We don't know what caused the malfunction. I heard them, shouting, trying to fix the issue. It didn't happen. They flew straight through, getting just enough adjustment from the orbital pull to be shot off course and towards the direction of the sun. She lets out a sigh here, shaking her head. Jets continued firing, taking them even further out. We maintained radio contact with them for 20 hours after takeoff. I spoke with them as fuel ran out. They began drifting into the void, no hope of turning, never to feel solid ground again. To this day, I don't know if it was something they really saw or the insanity getting to them as they died and faced their mortality. James was the first to begin raving, telling us about the bodies floating by the cockpit windows. I tried to clarify what he meant, assuming celestial bodies. I'll never forget the response from Bill. "No, Evelyn," he said to me. "Human bodies. Dozens of them." They described the field of bodies. Male and female, old and young, all naked as the day they were born. Bill swore that one smiled at him as he went by. We didn't have live feed cameras at the time, unfortunately, so we weren't able to confirm. The way he described them, though, I have no doubt they were seeing all of this. A lot of the transmissions got lost in static, limits of the tech at the time. The last broadcast we received was Bill. He was raving, still talking about the bodies. Said they were talking to him now, telling him he could live forever with them. he said he was going to open the emergency hatch. Maybe it was my emotions getting the better of me. Right before he opened it, and the static took over. I swear, there was another voice. She drifts off and stares out the window next to her. The sun went down an hour ago. Stars were plainly visible, shining in the inky darkness. I asked what the voice said. It's ingrained in my head. I can hear it, clear as the moment 60 years ago. Come, be with us. Become the stars and drift immortal. Gram is tired. Say she's going to bed. End transcription. Gram is in one hell of a mood today. Not sure if she's just feeling better than usual, or something has got her riled up. Either way, she's letting her feelings be known. That's just a forewarning before we get into this transcription. There are things about her here that I personally never wanted to hear. No, really. She can tell me about how she saw Eldritch beings in the vastness of space, and none of that is as terrifying as her talking about hooking up with astronauts in the training areas. Ugh. Here's the transcription. I'm going to chug bleach. Conversation from April 5th, 2020. Again, this is being told by Gram and translated by me. My own interjections are in these brackets. Ah, so you want to hear more? Alright, guess it's time to turn this BS off. Live through the damn missile crisis, and I'm going to get taken out because nobody's competent enough to stay in their damn houses. Gram has been cursing like a sailor all day. She only does this when she's either very happy or very anxious. So, let's see. I told you we had some crews up there already, yeah? Just couldn't get any successful returns down. Damn Reds beat us to that. Joke was on them, though. They just tossed Gagarin up there in a metal tube and waited for him to come back down on his own. We actually had our own man pilot himself back down to Earth. How's that for you? Russians don't have crap on American determination. So, we did a few other missions once we finally got the hang of putting people up there and bringing them back down. It was all smooth sailing for the most part. So now, what did we decide to do? Put a man on the goddamn moon. She gets up and goes to the kitchen, returning with a bottle of red wine and a comically large glass. I mention to her that it's only around 2 PM. I worked with astronauts, darling. Days don't matter when you're orbiting the Earth. Anyway, it was 1962 that we crashed a vessel on the far side of the moon. That was something of a test run, I suppose. Seeing just how bad we could crash and burn before we tried it again with people inside. We had the Ranger 4 vessel that we sent up there. Had to do a flyby of the moon for a bit and take some photos before dive bombing it to the surface and taking some pictures for us there. We never released those to the public. Scared the hell out of all of us in the command center when they transmitted back. Keep in mind, all the pictures we had at the time were black and white still. No color photography on that scale yet. So, Ranger 4 lands there and immediately begins snapping pictures. All of us are standing around, expecting to see just a barren expanse of grey rock. Nothing all too special. Lo and behold, the first picture comes back, and there's someone just standing there, right in front of the crash capsule. We couldn't tell the gender or race or anything. They were in a spacesuit that looked remarkably like the ones we were developing. So naturally we think, oh no, they beat us to the moon. Because who else could it be at this point? The Russians were the only other country keeping any kind of pace with us. Then we realized it couldn't be them. They would have already been rubbing it in our faces if they had landed a man on the moon. There's no way this was from anyone on our planet. That's when the rest of the pictures started coming in. The suit kept getting closer and closer to the capsule, maintaining the same stance the whole time. It just kind of floated over to it. Then you could see into the visor of the helmet, where there should have been someone's face visible. There was just fire. Pure, bright flame. Then the picture stopped. nothing else came from Ranger 4. She finishes off a glass of wine, or half gallon. It's hard to tell from the size of the glass. She immediately empties the rest of the bottle into it. I'll give the higher-ups and NASA credit, though. Crazy buggers didn't let seeing a flaming cosmonaut stop them from going ahead with their plans. We plugged away at it, sending up more and more missions to orbit the Earth, do flybys of the Moon, Mars, Jupiter, anything we could get near. We saw a few oddities here and there as we went, but things stayed mostly silent for those years. Maybe we just didn't notice it, because we were so focused on the mission at hand. Then, it finally happened in 1969, as you well know. We got to the Moon. Beat the Russians there, after all. There was that big televised bit with Neil and Buzz taking the steps onto the surface and everything. I really hated those suits they had him in. Didn't get to accentuate Buzz's best features for sure. The man had the best ass in the entire galaxy. This was one of five tangents about Buzz Aldrin's physical features throughout the day. I've edited these out for the sake of mine and your sanity. You ever consider that we landed someone on the Moon and sent up missions to land again and again for the next 3 years, then just quit cold turkey and never went back? Why do you think that is, Hey, I thought you wanted to hear about all this. At this point, she threw the remote for the television at me. I had retreated to my mental safe space during the Buzz Aldrin diatribe. Well, we did go back, a few times. This wasn't for the scientific research we did the last 3 years. No, this was for anthropological purposes. We found things on the Moon. We weren't the first beings there. No, we started finding small signs with the Apollo 14 mission. There were some little remnants of previous visitors. The first thing they found was some symbols carved into crater walls. Nothing that we could translate, of course. Nobody knew what the hell they meant, but we knew they weren't naturally occurring. That much was obvious. They took all the pictures of the ones they found. Pretty sure they're still working on it to this day. They'll probably crack the Zodiac cipher before that damn thing. Apollo 17 was when they knew they needed to carry this one on privately. That's the, quote, last manned moon mission that happened in 1972. For all the world knows, we ain't been back since. That's the way they want to keep it. Apollo 17 found way more than anyone previously had. They found full-on structures. Altars of worship is what it looked like. I can't even describe the images transmitted back. The way these things were built. It wasn't natural. There's no way that structures built that way should be allowed to stand. It was like the ghost of Lovecraft possessed Estra and made him design some screwed up church. We advised them not to go inside. We would send another mission up there with some better training and equipment to document all of this. That's where Apollo 18 to 22 came in. Before they left though, they photographed the structure from every angle. We didn't notice it until the day that it appeared. Absolutely identical, no matter what angle it was viewed from. 100% symmetry. Everything aligned perfectly, no matter how insane it was built up. Graham finishes the second glass of wine, leaning back in a chair. Well, I believe that's enough wine for 1 hour. Time for a good nap. All of that talk of Buzz got me thinking about the old days. I turned off the recorder and ran from the room. I can still hear Graham cackling from downstairs. April 6th, 2020. I'm going stir crazy. Graham seems to get stronger every day somehow. It's like she's stealing my youth and thriving in isolation. This may end up being a record of me going insane with her stories mixed in. Let's go sit out on the porch. It's a nice day out. I'm tired of being cooped up in here. I concede that I could use some fresh air, but make a promise not to go near the neighbours or anybody walking by in the street. She gives me an entirely too sarcastic scout salute and swears she won't. Alright, that's better. Feel my battery recharging already. Now, The moon church was what I was telling you about yesterday, right? That was some crazy stuff. So, Apollo 17 found this crazy structure that was just perfectly built. Strangest architecture I'd ever seen. Made no goddamn sense to anyone how it remained standing after all this time. So, we trained some other crews to go up after and look into it further. Specifically, that had degrees in anthropology and ancient cultures. Maybe we could find some links here between this and things that have been found on Earth. Well, naturally, nothing is ever that easy. They head up there in 1973, land smack next to the structure found by the previous mission, and get to it. By this point, technology has thankfully improved, so we have cameras in their helmets that allow us to see everything they see. I asked her how they had this kind of tech in 73, when a lot of things were still incredibly basic with video, especially transmitted over that vast of a distance. You really think the stuff you saw from that time was the most advanced technology being used by the government? Don't underestimate the amount of money the American government will throw at something if they feel it's a threat. The cameras and equipment we had on those missions was on par with that little video camera your mama gave me for Christmas a few years back. She's talking about the GoPro she got her 4 years ago that records in 4K. What the hell? Now she's laughing at me again. Like I said, don't underestimate government spending. So, anyway, Apollo 18 was a three-man crew. Jason Voss, Ben Codd, and Arthur Wayne. Wasn't too happy about Arthur going up there. We'd spent a few months together while he was training down at Cape Canaveral. God, if he could do half the things he could do in our gravity up there. If only I could edit my memory the same way I do this transcript. So, they got to work. Jason stayed in orbit around the moon, making sure everything on the main ship was fine. Arthur and Ben went down to the surface and set up base camp. There was the structure, and not even 100 feet away was their little landing pod, set up with everything in it. They were equipped for 3 days on the moon. First day goes off fine, just walking around the thing, taking measurements and samples. They determine that most of the structure is made from an unknown element. To this day, I don't think they've found out what it is. So, end of day one, and they go back to their base camp. Now, we have a couple of cameras set up in the pod, so we can see everything going on, just in case there's any issues technically, or God forbid, something happens between them. Arthur and Ben are both fast asleep. We've got the feed playing in command, just to monitor and keep an eye on everything. And suddenly, it glitches. Not a drawn-out one, though. Just a quick scramble, then it's back. Arthur and Ben are still asleep. Now, there's a figure, standing there in the airlock, though. Like nothing I've ever seen. Long limbs, big hands that almost look like bulldozers, and just a rounded-off knob right at the shoulders. I hit the intercom speaker for the capsule as fast as I could move, screaming at them to wake up. Poor Ben fell straight out of his bunk and onto Arthur underneath him, belly to belly. Now that's something I normally would have paid to see. But right now, my heart was racing for the wrong reasons. So, they both scramble up and look towards the airlock. That damn thing is still just standing there. I think it was looking at them. Arthur shouts at it, asking what the hell it wants. There's this low garble of noise that happens. Nothing discernible. It could have been interference for all we know. But by God, I saw Ben's face drain of all colour when it happened. Arthur went a bit slack, looking from Ben to the creature. Then, as fast as it showed up, it was gone. Poof, right into, well, guess you can't say thin air being where it was. Ben sat down on Arthur's bunk and just cried. It took him a good hour to actually calm down. In the meantime, we had no idea what was happening. Finally, he chilled out enough for us to ask him what had happened. He said that the thing had looked at him. No eyes or anything, but he knew it was looking at him. It said, "She was never meant to live." Now, this shook all of us. Almost a month before the mission, Ben and his wife suffered a miscarriage. She had been 6 months along. They were expecting a little girl. Then one day, the baby was just gone. No heartbeat, no activity. They didn't know what had happened. It tore Ben and his wife apart. They had a huge fight a week before liftoff because she didn't want him to go. Didn't want to lose another person she loved. I can't imagine what he felt when he heard that damn thing talk. They cut the mission short after that. Everyone was afraid of what might happen to Ben's mental state if anything else happened. They packed up quick and got the hell out of there. Ben dragged himself stupid afterwards, ended up driving his car off the interstate going 150 at around 3 in the morning. They barely got anything to bury. Graham wipes a stray tear from her eye. A man is jogging down the street with his dog, coming closer to our house. Graham calls out a greeting to him. He walks up and begins talking, much to my displeasure. Graham is speaking animatedly and leans down to pet the dog. I remind her we're supposed to be distancing just to be safe. Sorry, Jerry. My grandson here is a hard ass. I'll see you some other time. Anyway, that was the end of Apollo 18. Not a whole lot found out, but we were ready to try again. I was just grateful that Arthur had made it back in one piece. We were actually engaged, you know. Way back in the day, before he went up on that 19 mission in 74. I was a bit surprised at this. As far as I was told, Graham had never been married, and my grandfather had been killed in a car accident not long after she found out she was pregnant with my mother. We spent a lot of time together during that time. It was lovely. I miss that man. So, Arthur and Jason volunteered to go back on the 19 mission. I think Arthur was determined to get into that structure and see exactly what was going on with it. They had a new recruit along with them as well. Paul Orson. He was a former Green Beret during the Vietnam War. Tough son of a gun, and not one for conversation. They didn't know what they would find, though, so they wanted someone with combat training to go up. Everything goes as normal. It's old hat at this point. They land in the same spot for base camp. Arthur and Paul this time. They got there on day one and set everything up, then decided to rest up for a few hours and go straight in. Well, they didn't realize that they needed to find a way in first. Apparently, in all this time researching the structure, everyone just assumed there would be a door somewhere. No such luck. Everything on the wall outside was smooth. No cracks or seams signaling a door. They searched every damn inch of that thing. Nothing to be found. Lo and behold, I'm watching in on Arthur's camera while he's walking around the structure. Even in low gravity, he had two left feet. He tripped and fell straight through the wall. We thought we had lost him for a minute. It looked like the camera had hit something and shorted out. Then he asked us if we were seeing it too. The interior of the structure was larger than the exterior. Way more room to move about. Lights hung in the air like stars, bathing everything around him in a soft glow. It was like its own miniature galaxy contained in that one building. Probably one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. Arthur backed out then, wanting to make sure he could travel freely in and out of the structure before he got trapped in there, and it seemed to work fine. It was like there was a portal, a thin veil where it looked like a wall but wasn't. He grabbed Paul and showed him what he had found. Don't think he was too impressed. More like he was ready to shoot it if he could have found a gun. Exploring it further, they found a small spiral slope, almost like a ramp that went downward from the main chamber. They followed it for probably an hour before it got anywhere, seeing more of those strange symbols all over the walls on the way down. When they got to the bottom, it was like some kind of church. No idea what they worshipped or who, but there was an altar right there against the far wall. A statue rose up in the recess behind it. Looked to me like an elongated pyramid of sorts. Not really sure how to describe the geometry of it. There were angles that merged with smaller angles, curves where lines were. It was like my brain was trying to comprehend it through the camera feed, but just jumbled everything instead. That was about the time we noticed the spots on the altar. We're not 100% sure to this day what it was, but we had a good enough guess. It was dried, had obviously been there for quite a long time, but it still had that rusty red colour that only comes from dried blood. It was splashed all over the place up there, like someone had slit the jugular and waved all about up there. Had to have been gallons spilled out. That was enough for the two men for that day. They headed back up to base camp to make record of what they found and go back to sleep. They were out maybe 2 or 3 hours when it happened again. The camera glitched just like the last time, and that thing appeared. It wasn't in the airlock this time, though. It appeared right next to their damn bunks. We tried warning them, but it didn't seem to work. It's like our speakers were jammed. We were only able to watch in terror as that thing leaned over Paul and said something to him in that garbled noise we heard last time. God knows what it was. Then it was gone again. Nothing there. Paul got up and started putting on his suit to go outside then. I kept hitting the button, trying to ask what the hell he was doing. Got no response. Our line into the main capsule was dead. When he had the whole suit on, I tried the line going directly to his helmet. I said, "Paul, what the hell did that thing say to you?" "You know what he told me?" I shook my head in response. He looked straight up into the capsule camera before stepping out and said, "Finishing what they began." I still get chills thinking about that. It was one of the coldest things I've ever heard. By that time, Arthur had woken up and was getting his suit on as fast as he could. God, I begged him not to go after Paul, not to go into that damn church. Whatever was done in there before was bad, and there wasn't going to be anything good coming out of it. He was too good of a man, though. He got everything on and chased Paul in there. No idea how he had moved so fast, but Paul was waiting down there for him already, standing right on the altar and holding an old combat knife. Arthur shouted at him, asking what the hell he thought he was doing. He didn't say a damned word, just started lunging towards Arthur, brandishing that knife. I watched it all. All of it. Each of the helmet cameras was on at different sides of the big command screen. Our coordinator was shouting at me to tell them to stop and get themselves together. It wouldn't have done anything. There wasn't Paul in that suit anymore. There was a blind rage in his eyes. His breathing on the mic was like an animal that had been cornered. No, he wanted to kill, and he didn't care who he saw. They went back and forth for a while, throwing each other all around that unholy place. Finally, Arthur managed to wrestle a knife away from Paul. He stood up, holding it out in front of him. There were tears in his voice when he was talking, telling Paul to stay away, telling him they could go back home and have a drink, act like all of this never happened. It didn't matter. Paul rushed, and Arthur had no choice. He ducked down and thrust the knife upward. The camera in Paul's suit was splattered with red as he depressurized in seconds. Arthur screamed, looking at that altar and throwing the knife at it. He just lay there for a while, sobbing and shouting curses. He was alone up there. Graham's voice cracked. I've tried to transcribe the next part as best as I can, but some parts were difficult to make out. Arthur started pulling Paul's body back up towards the exit with him. Even if he had tried to kill him, he wasn't just going to leave him up there, all alone on a rock. He got to the top and tried to go through the wall back outside. But it was suddenly solid. No give. He tried the other walls, trying to make sure that he wasn't using the wrong one in his emotional state. Nothing. Still, no way out. He collapsed against the wall, taking in deep, shallow breaths. His oxygen tank only had about 10 minutes left by his count. The suits weren't designed for long outings back then. I hit the button to talk to him and tried to soothe him. He was almost hysterical, but I like to think hearing me helped him go quietly. I still remember seeing his face on that helmet camera. My last words to him, the little smile that he got right before he passed. He got to know that even though he was dying up there, on a mission, completely off the books, there would be part of him still living right here on Earth. Gram wiped tears away from her eyes. She had been openly sobbing, obviously reliving something painful. I put my hand out for her to take. The last three missions they sent up there served two purposes. They were recovery missions, to get those bodies back home and give them a proper burial. And demolition missions. They could not get back through the wall into the chamber the normal way, so they tried drilling through. There was no chamber though, just solid rock no matter how far they drilled into it. So they gave up after that. The next two missions brought explosives and detonated them around the structure, destroying it. We haven't gone back to the moon since then. Not even after that loss. Even if we had, I wouldn't have worked the mission. I would have absolutely refused. I told them I wasn't taking on any more crewed landing missions after that. They would have to find another communications head. She stared at me for a moment, before looking back out toward the sky. The moon was already hanging there, right at the cusp of night. She let out a long sigh. Some nights, I look out at the moon and like to think he's still out there, watching over me, watching over us. He would be proud that I'm finally telling someone about this. He'd always talked about having a family and grandchildren one day. I think he's up there right now, giving that sly grin he always had. I'm sure he's proud of you, wherever he is. Gram looked for a moment more as I sat there, stunned. Then she got up, gave me a hug, and went back inside to get ready for bed. Evening of April 9th, 2020. Gram asked me to sit on the porch and watch the moon tonight. Says this is the last of her stories. Can't believe I've been retired for 20 years now. Seems crazy at this point. Leaving the job, helping raise you kids. It was worth it though. You turned out okay. She gives a little chuckle here. So, there's two more things that happened right before I quit. One is a direct result of the other. Care to hear? I nodded. So, in 97, we put the very first rover up on Mars. We started it looking to see if it could support life up there, you know. Trying to expand out beyond our own planet. Hell, it's already crowded here. Has been since man first walked. Best thing about all this social distancing is I have an excuse to tell people to bugger off. Pathfinder was something though. Ugly little contraption. You wouldn't think it could get 10 feet, much less across a barren planet full of dust and rocks. But damn, that little thing moved. It was zipping here and there across the land, taking pictures and videos, scooping up samples and analysing them right then and there. Wonder of science. So, we're looking at all these pictures being sent back, amazed at everything we're seeing. There's huge sand dunes, cliffs. This place is like a giant desert, but it's beautiful. That was when the first storm moved in. Storms up there aren't like ours. There's no rain, just wind and lightning. The wind stirs up the sand and makes it hard to see, blocks out most of the light. So Pathfinder is up there. Sand and dust swirling around. Then, in a flash of lightning, you see this towering figure. It was thin, incredibly tall. Everything about it was disproportionate, though. It wasn't until the next flash of lightning that we connected it. It was one of those damn things from the moon. The ones that appeared when Skylab returned. This one was so much bigger, though. At least 10 times the size of the first one we saw. When this one spoke, we all heard it. It wasn't just some garbled mess of noise this time. It was plain as day. After it happened, we all realized that we hadn't heard it out loud though, but in our minds, each one hearing the same thing. The temple will live on. We ruled and shall rule again, worshipping amongst the stars. Then it was gone in the storm. Never saw one as large as that again. Haven't seen any of them since then, actually. Pathfinder didn't have any other encounters up there the entire time, and as far as I've heard from the folks that are still working, they haven't found anything else out of the ordinary. NASA made it a point to contact the other countries to tell them about the temple at that point. Naturally, the Russians already knew about it. The buggers. Turned out they had gone up to the moon at some point and found the ruins of the temple up there, took some of it back with them, and ended up having it lose all kinds of control back in 86. A lot of lives got lost up there because they didn't know what they were messing around with. They were experimenting with it in some underground lab when it went out of control. But of course, what's their first reaction when a damn space temple and those damn things show up in the backyard? They nuke the thing straight to hell, killing a ton of their own citizens and covering it up as some reactor meltdown. The footage they showed us, I'll never forget it. These buggers didn't even nuke it right away. That's why there was so much fallout. They let it go on for at least a week, absorbing everything and recording what happened. There were people inside that altar room when their worship session broke out. Those poor souls deserved so much more mercy than anyone could give them. After that, we all agreed that our first priority was protecting the Earth from whatever this was, not allowing any of that back down here. That was the time they started on the space station. Now, I don't know much of what they've been up to recently with it, since it was just being launched when I retired. They built it to keep a better eye on things out there in orbit, where they could conduct experiments and run some countermeasures right there, without anyone on Earth being any wiser. Smart move, I think. I know now, long before I left, they had a satellite that found the chain of bodies again, the same one that took the first manned crew up there. We could hear the whispers being transmitted back. I still wake up some nights hearing those whispers. What did they say? Come to us. Be sacrifices. Float eternal as a living altar to them. Them? Beats the hell out of me. Maybe it was that big thing they saw in the photos. Maybe that's what the temple was built to worship. Or whatever we were warned about by the follower. There's so many things we still don't know about what's out there. Probably things we will never know. It's all just lost in the vastness of space, never meant to be understood. We're still here, though. That's something. So, they've been keeping us safe until now. Maybe it's something else, though. Watching over us. The moon was out in full on the horizon now, shining bright as it rose further. Graham got up and walked out into the moonlight, looking upward. I know you're out there, Arthur. I know you're watching over all of us. You stayed up there because you were a stubborn old bugger, thinking you had to do everything to keep people from seeing what you saw. I felt you the other night, though. That full moon, you were there. We're going to dance in the moonlight together again, real soon. I love you. Graham tells me she's going to stay out here for a while. I'm going to go up and start transcribing all of this. Maybe get some actual relaxation in. I'm tired of being stuck in this damn house. Graham was dancing around in the moonlight as I walked back inside, humming Fly Me to the Moon to herself as she did. April 10th, 2020. Graham passed away early this morning. I had walked into the kitchen for a drink and noticed that the front door was still cracked open. This wasn't normal for 2 in the morning, so I walked out to check. Graham was sitting in a rocking chair on the porch, drenched in the bright moonlight. She had a smile on her face. She died peacefully in her sleep, carried off into the moonlight by the one she loved.
we always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chain to the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.